Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. At MidwayUSA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fishing Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today we got a very special guest on to talk about a cool new feature on the World Wide Webs, which I think everybody out there that's hunters, anglers, foragers, cooks, food seekers, adventurers, whatever you are, you'll be excited to hear what this is. So I will tell you that I'm excited to talk about it, and I think Chris is excited to talk about it too. So first off, I'll get some news out of the way. Some news since last podcast, trying to think. So just been working diligently. Ben and I are kind of working through the magazine project. We made the official announcement a couple weeks ago, so we're rolling forward with that. We've got just about the entire layout of the magazine done, and we're just putting the final touches on it, looking to still launch mid-March. So as a reminder, everybody, that will be Harvesting Nature magazine, so it's going to be primarily electronic, with the option to do print on demand. So that really means that if you want to read it on your phone, you can read it on the phone from our website. Once you purchase it, you'll get a PDF delivered to you as well. You can read it there. And then if you're like, you know what, I really like this, I want to throw it on the coffee table, I want to enjoy it with my friends and talk about it over poker, you know what, it'll be a print copy too. All you got to do is hit the print on demand button. It'll ask you to enter your address, do a little pay, and then boom, it's off to your door, which is really great. Keeps us from having to keep a bunch of stock on hand, and also keeps us from wasting a bunch of paper, because oftentimes you think about print magazines and they're on the rack for a little while, and then where do they really go when the next one comes in, right? Do they go back to the printer? Do they go to the shredder? Do they go to the compost pile? I don't know. We're not going to have that problem, though, because we're going to have electronic for people who want to do electronic and paper for those who want to do paper. So the other really cool feature about that is like all the ads, all the links, there'll be videos embedded in there. There'll be all kinds of cool stuff that you can click on and interact inside the magazine. So really, it's going to be a very interactive piece. It'll be cool to see that kind of come together and be able to get in there and click around and click links and, you know, go to some of your favorite retailers on there. You know, whatever's in your wheelhouse, you'll enjoy the magazine. I'm definitely sure of that. Also, too, we finalized the testing, and I punched in the order today for our big game spice blend. So that is going to be hopefully coming through in March. We'll have our first arrival of that as well. So stand by for that. You'll see the release on that, but that'll be a exciting thing. We did a lot of testing. It was like five or six of us involved. I went through the testing process on a couple of the podcasts, but know that it has been thoroughly tested on a range of big game meats. So we're excited to share that with you. And I think you're really, really going to enjoy this spice. We'll look to do that. We'll start working as we move forward into the year. Turkey season is one of the big ones next, so we'll be working on developing an upland bird. So that'll include turkey, pheasant, dove, quail, chucker, grouse, whatever you think of. We're going to develop a blend for that as well. And so that'll be really focused on that upland game bird piece, which will be good for turkey. So we're going to try to span it between the darker meat and the lighter meat of game birds. So really excited to see that. And it's always fun testing because it gets a taste, which is good. And then, as always, we have our cooking classes. So both Adam and I have been steadily at it, doing cooking classes every couple weeks. We may look to combine that. We've been doing some brainstorming. So we might mix up, do some cocktails, do some cooking, do kind of a whole interactive piece where we're teaching some more techniques. We'll see. But stay tuned. We'll either keep doing what we're doing or we'll add in some extra flavor. So there is that piece. But with all that out of the way, I guess, you know what? I actually have one other big piece of news. So I was reached out to by Trevor, who is the Backcountry Hunter and Anglers Armed Forces Initiative Coordinator. And so Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, also known as BHA. BHA's Armed Forces Initiative seeks to connect veterans and active duty military members with public land opportunities, get them reconnected to hunting. There's been a lot of information, a lot of studies out there that have shown that veterans exiting service are able to reconnect a lot with duty and purpose and find themselves in the wild, in hunting and fishing and foraging and exploring. So BHA has recognized the importance of that, and last year, the year before, they created the Armed Forces Initiative, and Trevor's now at the wheelhouse and has set forth a national board of advisors, and I was asked and graciously accepted, so I will be sitting on the board as the communications and operations coordinator. So I'll be helping work with all the base and state liaisons to help promote veteran and active duty participation in the outdoors. So really excited to serve with those folks. Been a BHA member for a long time, done a lot of great work with them, continue to look forward to be involved, and see where this new fun adventure goes. But if you haven't checked out their website, you need to do that. Go over to the BHA website and look up Armed Forces Initiative. So really cool stuff there. But now, since we got that good bit of news out of the way, I will introduce our guest. So he is the founder of Season Report. It's the modernized almanac. He grew up in southern Colorado, where he first learned how to hunt and fish in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. After some years in the city and working in a lab, he needed to get back to nature. So he now lives in Virginia with his wife and daughter, where he teaches science and spends as much time as possible hunting, fishing, gardening, and hiking. Please welcome Chris Chain to the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to talk about this. I mentioned it before, but you and I were chatting. I was reading through the website, and I'm excited to get down into what is the season report. But first, I alluded to it briefly, where you're from and how you got introduced to the outdoors. But could you expand upon that for us?
Certainly. I'm kind of like a military brat, where I've moved all around. Primarily lived in Colorado, Louisiana, and now Virginia. And so got a nice blend of Appalachian Rockies and Bayou in my background. And
nice. What part of Louisiana?
Central. And then okay. I went to college at Louisiana Tech, North.
Oh,
Central.
Nice. I'm a University of New Orleans grad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Definitely made our weekend trips down to New Orleans. A lot.
It's a good spot to weekend trip.
Yeah, for it sure. Certainly is. And I got introduced to the outdoors, like I'm sure a lot of people do. My dad got me out in the mountains, and it was one of those things where, looking back, didn't realize how much we were supplementing the food budget, but in reality, all the experiences I got were just a blast. And when you live in the Rockies and you get out there every single weekend fishing and going hunting, it's the perfect upbringing.
Yeah, I agree. We were chatting before, and I've been in the Rockies here very briefly, but man, there are some adventures to be had out there for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I've since gone back as an adult, just on a lot of hiking trips. I haven't had the opportunity to go hunt it as an adult, but just getting deep in the mountains. You know, we've done a buddy of mine has brought me out to the Four Pass Loop outside of Aspen. And if you've never done that hiking trail, it is by far some of the prettiest scenery I've ever been to. It's a nice like 30-40 mile loop and high altitude the whole time. You see mountain goats and everything. Colorado, there's a reason everybody moves there.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. I believe it now for sure. So outside of sort of growing up and supplementing the dinner table with fishing game, how did you really dig your heels in and decide, like, this is what I really want to do, this is what I want to enjoy doing?
You know, I didn't do much at all in high school, college, those years, and it was kind of a perfect storm. I got back in the mountains and I started hiking a lot more, and then had the great fortune of being invited to go on a hunt, and it's just all those childhood memories kind of clicked, and that term adult onset hunter really applies to me. And you know, growing up we had a garden, and so you know, once you get your own place and you start to, you know, bring in a little protein with hunting and then try different parts on your land to build the best garden and then slowly get everything figured out to where you can actually produce a decent amount of food, it kind of all came together at the same time.
That's good. Yeah, kind of that self-reliance piece. I think a lot of people are definitely going towards that. And I don't know, I am. I've been thinking, even as we moved out here to Colorado, I took a stance too late to get any type of winter garden in, which I wish I would have because it's been a fairly mild winter. But I have all the materials stockpiled now, so I'm about to start constructing and start working on the garden beds for the spring. So pretty excited.
Nice, yeah.
So let's see. And my mind just blanked. I'm sorry. So this is always a fun question that Corey enjoys me asking, and I always enjoy the answer. Is so what's in your freezer now that you're looking forward to cooking next?
So I have some venison, some duck, some black bear, and a few bass fish in the freezer. Yeah, okay. And I can't say I'm. I want to cook them all. You know, quite surprisingly, the black bear, I never really expected that I would enjoy that meat as much as I did until mm-hmm. I got one this season. And now, unfortunately, I've almost eaten through the whole thing. It was such an unexpected flavor profile that mm-hmm. really just goes well with everything. And I'm already starting to really think about next year, how I can restock the freezer.
Yeah, but it's man, I had, you know, had bear on occasion before, but just tasting it this past year, it's just, man, I'm like hooked. And the fat too, and just the juice, and just like, oh. But
now, have you ever had wild boar?
I have had wild boar, yep.
That was a surprisingly good meat as well. I didn't expect that there'd be such a difference between domestic and wild, but it kind of, that's the only thing I can describe bear being in the same ballpark.
It's like a complexity that mm-hmm. that doesn't exist. And I think we lean back a lot on the fact that, you know, being raised on domestic pork and domestic beef and domestic chicken, there's nothing wrong with it, I'll caveat that, but a lot of that for a long period of time the agriculture industry was, and to an extent still is, very geared towards of like, we want to create the most palatable product possible. And so palatable also translates into kind of a blank canvas where people can doctor it up as they need it. So you're not really getting the true like flavor of the animal versus like wild game. Now you start talking about complexity. You start talking about diet. You start talking about all these things that, you know, ranchers and everyone have spent years sort of developing. In the wild, that doesn't exist. Like, it's just the natural flavors. And I think, to come back full circle, is bear, they eat so much, being an omnivore, is just like, it's hard to compare the flavor profile to really anything else. And I think almost the same with wild boar, depending on what they're eating and kind of all that. It's just so much different, so much complex, so much more flavor, you know, tough, lean, however you want to go with it, depending on age. But man, what a cool two animals to compare.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for the longest time, I was really a calories in type of eater. And It wasn't until hunting and really getting the garden off the ground did I ever stop to appreciate those different flavors. Because Until then, it was all just what could I buy? And there's a reason everything tastes like chicken. And then all of a sudden you start to open up this kaleidoscope of options in the woods right behind your house. And it really diversifies the dinner table.
So what's probably one of your favorite? So excluding bear, so let's take that off. Let's go a little deeper. What's your favorite dish or favorite preparation?
Venison Wellington, number one. But, you know, everybody wants to do the showcaser. I actually, right after this, I'm going to be marinating some jerky and smoking that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I have yet to find a cut of venison that I don't enjoy getting the most out of.
Yeah. I feel you on that for sure. Jerky's good, man. I love jerky. I think if I could survive off of it, I could probably just eat jerky and drink coffee and just be like, that's going to be me as an old man. I'm just going to be salty and just like beef jerky in my pocket of my t-shirt and like a thermos of coffee with me everywhere.
That sounds like a good life.
Yeah, not too bad. Nice. Well, excited to learn of your plans with that jerky. That'll be good. So let's talk about the intersection of your passion and the creation of the season report. Like, how did that play out? When was the aha moment?
So the aha moment was probably, it was in 2020. You know, that was kind of the silver lining of everything shutting down because I had this opportunity to sit there and think. But the genesis really goes back to my time in a lab. I had I had this series of 5,000 different images that I was tasked with counting all of the red and green dots that were adjacent to one another. And each image had hundreds of these dots. And so I just looked at this stack of photos and said, I'm not going to do that. My gosh. And I was fortunate enough to get into a coding class. And they got you really brushed up on all the basics of coding. And then, you know, ultimately, we didn't end up using that data. But at least instead of mindlessly looking through all these photos, I learned a skill. And I've kind of kept it up. And then I was actually working on some code for a different project entirely, and it dawned on me in 2020 that actually I could probably use, because I was in the process of making my own personalized kind of Excel spreadsheet for the upcoming hunting season, and I was going to print it out and laminate it and put it in my pocket, but it dawned on me that that would be a perfect opportunity to put some of that code toward this project, and it was really, you know, I played around with creating the prototype, and I created the original Virginia season report and showed it to some friends. And every single person that I showed it to, they were just kind of shocked. How has something like this not existed before? And I mean, every single person was giving me that same response. And so I felt like something that I was just doing for friends and neighbors kind of turned into that aha moment where, oh, I might be onto something. And so then, you know, everything was shut down and you couldn't really go anywhere. So it was a perfect opportunity to really put my head down. And I got a nice first pass. Well, I did about 20 states and played around with the concept of being able to move around from state to state. Again, people really liked it. And then I just kind of buckled down and did the whole country. And then more recently, behind the scenes towards the end of the hunting season, I was working on, because I kind of had the idea that I was onto something there and I could pursue all hunting opportunities to the most specific possible degree, which is still the plan. We're going to continue to improve and iterate upon all the hunting stuff, but I couldn't shake the fact that I was getting stuff out of my garden. And really the genesis is I got tired of having to Google you know, this thing season Virginia, or this thing when to plant, and then go through, get burned on a few links, read, scroll through a bunch of ads and personalized stories. I just wanted the data.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it all kind of came together, and it's been a great reception. It's been really validating to hear stories of people being like, oh my gosh, this is actually really helpful.
Man, I tell you, if I don't know if you ran into complexities when you got into Florida, but the variation in growing zones in Florida is just like, so we lived in Key West, and there we operated a commercial hydroponic farm. Well, when you start growing there, you're at this point closer to Cuba and the Caribbean than you are the majority of the continental United States. So
absolutely.
Key West is one of the only spots in the United States. I forget the exact zone. I think it's like 11A or 11B or 12A or 12B. I forget. But if you look at like, all right, I want to start growing this particular item of produce. Well, you start doing research, and really the only research that exists is maybe from like the University of Florida. Well, you may not get that much information coming out of the Florida Keys. Like the furthest south you may get information is from like, you know, in the Miami area or the southern part of Florida, but that is even still a different growing zone than further down in the Keys. So if you ever want to talk about that growing zone, I have some recommendations for sure.
I would love to offline. Yeah, pick your brain. You know, I encountered a lot of that with, the lower 48 is done for gardening, but I'm working on Alaska and Hawaii. And
nice.
They're such unique climates that are obviously not part of the lower 48. Mm-hmm. And I've been running into those edge cases of those two, where it's really those extreme changes in altitude can mean so much.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Any plans for Canada? We have a lot of Canadian listeners out there that I'm sure are piqued their interest.
I have had several requests about that, and it's definitely the amount of times I hear that question tells me I definitely got to get started on Canada.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a fair thing. That's one kind of model we've always stuck to, is like when you think about hunting and angling, it's like we should think about it holistically. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you think about, people talk about the North American model, right? That's not just unique to us. That's the entirety. So try to take an approach the same way. But all right. So now, can you walk me through? So I go to the website, seasonreport.com. And I sign up, and then I log in.
Right.
When I log in, walk me through what everything looks like. Walk me through what I have access to. How can people utilize it?
So my goal early on, whenever I started to see the power of this, was I wanted something that you could open up and already save your login information, so you're always there, and I wanted it to bring up the information that you really need in the moment, because mm-hmm. we've all been out hunting and had a tag in our pocket for something, and we weren't quite sure if it was that date or maybe if it was next weekend because we were after this other animal primarily. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a million different uses. And so I really wanted something where within, like, my personal goal was 2 clicks, you know, hit go on the website and then, you know, click on the piece of data that you want, and it doesn't have to change pages. And so, to answer your question, you can go and search the hunting, foraging, gardening opportunity, fishing soon to come, and you can save your location to your profile. So that way, whenever you open that website up, it auto brings it up to your kind of personalized dashboard. And I keep hunting up top, just because this is a hunting forward service. But if you have something that you care about, I want that information really easy to be brought right in front of your eyes.
You hinted at it a little bit. And so mainly, like, so we're looking at growing seasons for gardeners, for those that want to garden. So how does that look? Does it say, like you mentioned, plant this at this specific time, or does it give kind of the growing period?
So it's different for different plants, but it will be, you know, sow your seeds indoors if you prefer, transplant time, a growth if it was applicable, and then a harvest time, an anticipated harvest time. And so you can, even if you get into the season a little bit late, you can still catch that transplant time or still kind of map out what will be in bloom and what will be harvestable at what point.
No, that is super useful.
And then if you click on the stuff on the horizontal bar chart, I have a lot of this information presented in a few different ways just to see what people seem to gravitate toward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, future plans are where you select your preference for what's visible. But I have, you know, those dates of when things start and end, and those are obviously generalized based on weather patterns of that particular season. But then I have, for gardening, just kind of a general tip and something mm-hmm. to watch out for in each one of those different periods. And so I might have, you know, make sure you don't overwater and cause a mold problem, or watch out for rotting on the vine, or this is what you should look for a tomato, right before it ripens, stuff like that.
Oh, nice. Huh. I think that's pretty cool, because looking at a lot of those bar charts for like the growing periods, one thing I think they commonly leave out is like the sowing and germination period. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that you clued in on that, and that's super cool, because that gives a realistic timeline for some folks who will be like, well, it's not, you know, or they'll sow too early and then, you know, plants aren't strong enough to survive out there.
Right. And, you know, with everything, I include links to mm-hmm. things that you should certainly reference for far more information. And so through this process, I was lucky enough to find that every state has a university that seems that has hyper local information about mm-hmm. what you should know. So again, this is I'm eliminating that time spent Googling, but it's also, I want people to really start to think about this in terms of like, if you get your food with your hands, this is your hub for information that you can spiderweb out from.
Yeah. It's like, it's called the Agriculture Extension Program. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Yep.
I am a master gardener in Florida. And I worked with the extension agent there. I have yet to do it in Colorado. I need to sign up, but,
nice. We'll definitely have to have a conversation, because I actually, when I discovered the extension program, oh my gosh, this is everything I need to point people toward.
There's so much information, and you really like start to get in reports, and I learned how to kind of go through some of those reports on planting and growing and evaluations, and like, you know, the people who are doing the research, like it's led by one of the extension agents, so, you know, horticulturalists, but people helping them, it's just like the average volunteer. But they're so passionate about it that the wealth of information is just like, wow. So right. I encourage people to check that out. One thing I was thinking, and I don't know, this may be on your docket already, but something that cool would be to do is if you look at kind of common pests in areas and looked at kind of their life cycle and kind of overlaid that with the life cycle of the plants. Because then as people are looking at their plants, you know, you look at things like root rot and are my tomatoes ripening, but it's like, holy smokes, what's this bug? Or, hey, you know, it's this time of year, keep an eye out for, you know, cutworms or tomato hornworms or anything like that. So
I wrote that down. That's a great idea.
Food for thought.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah.
To go like just full-blown redneck on these fish. This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun, Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.
So awesome. So we've talked about gardeners, hunters. We talked about kind of the season access. So you're able to look geographically kind of what the seasons are for different animals. Any other functionality for hunters that they would really clue into?
So I have two different portals you can use. Search, you can just key in exactly where you need to go. But then Discover works for only hunting. And so this is a tool for people to, as it says, discover new hunting opportunities. So mm-hmm. you can go in and supply a date range when you have off of work. And you can say, all right, where can I hunt elk within this date range? And it will bring all available options across the nation in front of you, Ooh. Down to even local, like hyper local answers.
So like it would be like GMUs in Colorado, like game management units.
Correct. Yep.
Oh, that's such a neat functionality. I really, really like that. Because I'm oftentimes, you know, yeah. or you may be traveling somewhere like, oh, I want to go visit friends in Maryland, but I want to do some hunting or fishing, soon to be coming, right? I want to do hunting or fishing there. So I would definitely use that feature to be like, what's in season before I even left the house? That way I'd pack up and try to make some plans. So that's a neat feature for sure.
Yeah. And then, you know, top front and center with all the search results there, I have a link to the portal to buy your license. So it's trying to all the stuff that you do in your brain anyways, I'm just trying to make that happen faster.
And I appreciate that. As somebody who really enjoys efficiency, it's really good because I've said for many years, I'm like, man, it would be great if there was just one spot you could go and see all the seasons like lined up in a view, like, all right, this is, you know, where I'm going, what I'm doing, what can I do? And so it's perfect. You are the man. You've answered that question for me.
Appreciate it.
So also too on my list here, I have foragers. Do you have resources for foraging?
So that was something that I didn't really get to until the last few years. And I started looking. Actually, I visited family over in Norway and Sweden. And over there, I was there during chanterelle season. And I was blown away. Every mm-hmm. single town you go to, they just have these like 10x10 pallets of freshly picked chanterelles, and they'll just throw them in some oil and salt and pepper and for like 50 cents you'll just get a plateful. Yep. It's wonderful. And that really opened my eyes to, oh my gosh, there's so much growing, I need to start learning more. And then you go out to Montana and get some huckleberries, or you know, find some raspberry vines over here in Virginia. Slowly started finding out more and more information. And then as I was doing this expansion outside of just hunting information, I realized there were a few resources, but nobody's really brought all these disparate food opportunities together to really maximize what you can get with your own hands. And so with that, I have a lot of oyster, morel, mushroom season in Ooh. General. Some chanterelles, a few other choice mushrooms, and then I get into berries. And then, you know, another one that I didn't even know this existed until a few years ago is pawpaw fruit. And it's a fruit. Native, yeah, it's like a banana, custard, mango, a weird hybrid. It's native to North America. It grows mm-hmm. from Georgia up to kind of Pennsylvania. And there's a pawpaw patch that you have to find, and they are ripe for a few weeks in September. And my wife and I went on hikes for probably 2 years in a row just trying to find this. After we found out what it was, we were determined to find them because we were right in the heart of the region. And so that was another one of those educational moments where I didn't even know that existed, and luckily I had somebody bring it up in conversation. But, you know, when you make a database and you show all options available, it's really easy to bring that information to somebody and open their eyes to what's around them.
Sure. All right, let's go back to the pawpaw fruit. Did you find them?
We did. At the second or third year, I think we did. And they're this weird fruit. They kind of look like when they're ripe, they kind of look like a banana that's a little mm-hmm. too ripe, but they're kind of squat. And they have really fat seeds. There's kind of a strong flavor. It's like a vanilla, custard, mango, banana all mixed together.
I like it. Yeah.
It's kind of like eating a bear or a boar. There's a unique flavor to it. I've mm-hmm. never tasted anything like it, but it's also got a lot of familiar flavors. Not my favorite, but I was happy to have tried it. And we have a neighbor who's a really good mixologist, and we're going to be making some pawpaw drinks come September.
Nice. Papa, yeah. Not for granddads, for, no. For the fruit.
Yeah.
Although if you made it with some old granddad, you could be like, these are Papa granddads.
Certainly. We could have a few of them and explore all the different names for Papa and Grandpa.
There you go. Nice. Yeah, I don't think I've come across that fruit, although it's very interesting. But no, I'm excited to hear about the foraging aspect. I think that's always good. We've definitely tried to grow more in there. I personally have tried to grow more in that area over the last couple of years. So I want to get on there and play around. I'm be curious to see. And then so...
And before you go on, you know, as I've been building this, I've kind of taught myself different things. And so as I was out during bow season this last fall, I was thinking about all this stuff and slowly tinkering. That was in the very early stages of putting together this current update. But just by having that knowledge front of mind, all of a sudden I noticed chicken of the woods mushrooms and lion's mane mushrooms out in the Appalachian mountains, and grabbed them, you know, put some olive oil on them, had an excellent meal at hunting camp. And it's just something I would have never, ever done without thinking about all these different food sources together.
That's pretty, it's definitely cool. Very, very useful. And all right, so I'll ask the question. We talked about it a little bit. So website only or app?
So currently it's website only. I have the app designed. It's a mix of trying to grow a little bit more and hear a little bit more feedback from different people before you put the months of dedicated directional work into making an app, right? So I want to make sure that it's exactly the state that I want it before I go on. And to say that it's the state I want it, this is very much a... work in progress, and it's in its kind of rough form at this point. And I've been focusing on building the engine before slapping on a shiny coat of paint. And you know, I'm extremely excited about the app design. I think if you find utility now, I think when it comes out as an app, it's gonna look a lot different. It's gonna still deliver information just as fast, but it's gonna be a lot more useful. Which I'm extremely excited to get to that point and put it in people's hands.
It would be good. My my Sunday screen time report will have that one at the top. It'll be like, you spent 80% of your time on the season report.
That would be great. Well, ironically, like I hate those apps that steal your attention. And you look up and like, how did I spend 2 hours, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to make something that sucks your eyeballs and all your attention. But... it would be awesome if I heard more and more people using it, just as you said.
Yeah, I mean, you've got apps that create opportunities for mindless entertainment, and then you have apps that are functional and are a resource. And I tend to gravitate towards the apps that are functional and a resource. And like, I don't even think I have any games because I don't let my kids play on my phone. So I don't have any games on my phone. It's all just like an app has a purpose. So
we're the same.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will anxiously await the app, and until then I'll create a favorites tab for it and add it on my, my links. I can already tell you that I'm going to have a conversation with the crew here in the next week or so, and we're going to be laying out kind of our hunting and fishing trip, our hunting plans for the next, the rest of the year. And I guarantee you that we're all going to be using this, to help lay down some plans. So.
No, that's great. And you know, we're in that weird period between last year's data is old, but they're about to start releasing that new information. And so towards the end of December, I just felt like there was something that I could do. And so I projected forward hunting seasons for next year, because they change, but they change moderately. So,
sure.
And so I, for all the states that you want to go look for fall 2022, that information is there. It's searchable. You can save it. But I have a little disclaimer that says, you know, these are my projections, subject to change whenever the states release that information. So you won't completely waste your time there.
That's good. No, that's good to know as well. And I think it's very good you put that disclaimer there, because some people may just take truth to it and they're like, wait, but it changed.
Right.
So, no, that's all good. What would you say is your favorite feature?
You know, I think for planning, that Discover tab is pretty cool. But, you know, with this new update, we have all these different food sources. I personally, I'm just enjoying seeing all the different opportunities in one place.
Yeah.
Across all the different food sources. It's just, the more I use it personally, the more powerful it is in terms of like shaping how I think about the outdoors. And, you know, obviously I like it. I built it. I've spent a lot of time thinking about it. But as I start to go think about morel season coming up, I have to start thinking about what types of trees there are. And even if it's a tree type that isn't suitable for morels, oh, that might be a really good acorn tree that I should put a GPS point on for later on in the fall. That might be a good spot to come back and deer hunt. And so I think to answer your question would be just the dashboard with all that information readily available.
Sure. It's kind of a hard question to answer too. I mean, you're a father, so it's like, hey, what's the favorite part of your kid? And it's like, I don't know. depends on the time of day.
Yeah. To that end, this has really spurred us to grow our garden even larger this year. And so my daughter's just at that age where she can start to help put some seeds in the soil. And we started some a little early, just so she could get used to that process, and she's watching them come up and stuff. And it's been a really fun process, just bringing it into the family.
Yeah, it's super fun. It's always so interesting when you start to kind of, you know, if you look at writing, or you look at cooking or photography or any of the things, and you start to mold those into more of an outdoor focus. So even with this, like developing a website and making available all these resources, like you yourself are growing, like you said earlier, as you are putting this information together, because somebody's got to peruse through the useful and overly detailed scientific reports and all the other information you're using. And I think that your statement was very reflective of it. It's like you end up kind of immersed in this indirectly, because it becomes your passion, as well as like growing your passion for the outdoors. So it's
absolutely.
I'm always excited to see when people embark on journeys like these, because you get something that's like, I really, really care about this, but then it turns into this whole multifaceted adventure of like, all right, now, you know, I'm learning about foraging. Now I'm learning about berries and trees and acorns and, you know, and then next thing you know, you're on the Wild Fishing Game podcast. And it's just like
it has been a kind of a crazy ride with that respect. But it's been fun to grow personally, but also to bring friends and neighbors along for the ride too.
Yeah. Because
people who would otherwise not eat this or that, trying new types of meat, or, you know, I've turned a few friends onto hunting in general over the last year, and that's always fun to bring somebody out on their first deer hunt, or line them up for that first shot at a buck. It's just the whole realm of the outdoors is a lot of fun.
And I think what's really neat is the approach that you're taking by really looking at it from a food standpoint, is that you're going to introduce a lot of folks that you're never going to meet and you're never going to realize, because they may get on it and be like, I really enjoy gardening. And they see the functionality of your website. And then they're like, all right, you know, maybe I'll try this foraging thing. And the next thing you know, they're fishing. And the next thing you know, they're hunting. It's like, you know, it's a gateway to open up opportunities, but because the information is presented in such an organized and approachable manner that I think people are really gonna, if I'm sure they already are, but people are gonna latch onto it even more. And that really excites me, because now you're talking about, you're forever changing the face of hunting and fishing and foraging. And
I don't know about that, but I appreciate the sentiment.
No. I think so.
Well, I joke with some friends that, you know, there's a lot of different ways to measure success with something like this. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, in this divided, fractured world, if I pulled up to a stoplight with a Prius and a good old boy truck, and they both had a season report sticker on it, I would consider this a wild success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I prepare yourself. Yeah, there'll be a time. So, no, it's all awesome stuff. So how can people access it? What's the best way? I see there's a free trial on here.
Mm-hmm. It's seasonreport.com, and you can go there and sign up for a 2-week free trial. I'm simplifying that registration process this month to make it just more streamlined and easier, so you don't have so much friction getting started. And then you can always check out our Instagram and Facebook at MySeasonReport. That's all original content that we put up from just our personal hunting and fishing and gardening and all of our endeavors.
Ooh, there it is. I like to poke around on the Instagram while we talk. And
you could also, the way I go to Season Report, even though it's not an app right now, you know you can save websites to your phone's dashboard, and it just has its own icon. And so
wait,
I found that.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, if you go to any website in your phone's browser, you can save as a bookmark, but there should be an option that says save to home screen or something like that. And you can put it on your home screen as just a quick link.
All right, let's see. I'm going to figure out how to do this. All right, so I'm on there. My season report right now. Add to home screen.
Maybe I should communicate that a little bit to help people get over the hump.
Yeah, I never knew. Look at this. There it is. See the little, you got your own icon right there.
Awesome.
That is super cool. And it even takes a little snapshot of your page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use that for a lot. There's, when Weather Underground got bought by, was it AccuWeather? Mm-hmm. I was using Weather Underground for years, and then...
Me too. Their hurricane models are so good.
Yeah, and then they just made it so hard to reach.
Yeah.
Their portal. So that I use that little trick for a lot of those websites I really want to go to.
Nice. I like it. That's a hot tip. It's probably like, wow. And you got some cool stuff here on Instagram.
Appreciate it.
How'd you like that 1491 book?
Oh, I love that, man. That was a little bit before my cooking phase, but definitely as I was starting to teeter into hiking a lot more. Mm-hmm. We'd lived in St. Louis for a little while, and of course, after we move away, and then I start reading that book, they mentioned Cahokia, which is on the Illinois side. Mm-hmm. And it was at one point, if you read that book, you'll remember it was the largest human civilization in the world, even larger than Paris at the time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that book is an eye opener.
It's crazy. It's crazy to think all the things that happen pre-Columbian times and very little documentation of any of it.
Well, when we go down and visit family in Louisiana, some of our family live on a bayou, and if you go there after a rainstorm, all that sandy, silty soil will get churned up, and you just go walk, and it's just arrowhead after arrowhead. Mm-hmm. And it really, I mean, you hear them talking about how they were looking there for arrowheads as a kid. How many people had to live here and make arrowheads for us to have this many continuously available? It's mind-blowing.
That is so crazy. So when I was in college, so I have an anthropology degree, and I did a bit of time working for the regional archaeologist in New Orleans, and we went to the north side of Lake Pontchartrain, and there's a lighthouse that's there. I think it's the Pontchartrain Lighthouse. But on that lighthouse itself dates back very, very long ago, late 17, maybe early 18. I'm not entirely sure. Don't quote me on the date. But a lot of the existing structure is built on a shell mound. And shell mounds are exactly as it sounds. It's literally a lot of dirt and shell mixed in. Basically, the indigenous folks that lived there at the time would eat oysters and shellfish and make a big pile of it. And then after a while, they made a big pile that was big enough to have a sturdy foundation for structures and things like that. So we went out and did shovel testing, which is where you dig a shovel's width by a shovel's width square, and you dig down and you test the layers to see if there's any archaeological record before you start to expand. Mm. And literally you're just digging through like shell and shell and shell and shell, like all the way down. You're finding little trinkets and stuff along the way, but there's a lot of history hidden.
Oh, and that's the cool part about getting out. Ever since I took up hunting, my favorite hiking is off trail. I want to get to the top of that mountain, or I want to get to the other side of it and just find something along the way. And I mean, you stumble upon, old mine shafts, which are terrifying, or
yes,
or just tools, and I mean everything that you can discover out there. There was one time I was in a hollow in Virginia, and there was a telegraph wire that I tripped over, and I pull it up, and then all of a sudden I see kind of that knob and tube thing that the telegraph was wrapped around. And I mean, it was barely still a thing. The wire was disintegrating in my hands, and it was just, I don't know who was there, but that was, relatively young in terms of civilization, but it was still really cool to think, man, was this Civil War? Was this well, obviously it was after, but, it was just a lot of history can be found on the floor of the woods.
Oh yeah, for sure. 100%. Yeah, getting out and adventuring is the only way you're going to see it. You can read about it, but to see it, you got to be out there. So, really awesome conversation. So let's remind people one more time on where they can go to it, your website.
Yep, seasonreport.com, and on Instagram and Facebook at @myseasonreport.
Nice. And your annual memberships right now, it's like $15?
Correct, $15 for the year. And there's always, I just set up a cross promotion with Howl for Wildlife, and you can use a code to get $5 off and then kick some money back to conservation. I'm really trying to make a tool that can bring a lot of utility, but also conservation is foremost in what I'm trying to achieve, and really point people towards a way to start to. So my mission statement with this is to get people more easily engaged in the outdoors, so they can ultimately develop a sense of ownership, which will hopefully lead towards responsible stewardship. And so, if you pay attention to Instagram, I'm constantly putting up different conservation promo codes to shave some dollars off and kick it back to where it's most needed.
That's awesome. I like that a lot. So, well, so this is kind of the point in the show where we do our last thoughts. So being that you're the guest, I'll kick it over to you. So do you have last thought, question, comment, anything you want to ask me or leave the guests with? The floor is yours.
I think the one thing I would recommend is just try something new this year. Springtime's about to start. Try, get on there, tinker around, find a new food source that you haven't tried before, and then work towards figuring out how to find it, and then make the most out of it on the dinner table.
Man, I think that's a great recommendation for sure. I really appreciate the conversation. I'm really excited to start to dive more into your website and really get familiar with the functionality. I'm excited about the things we talked about, and I know it's going to be very useful. So I will say to everyone that all the show notes and links that we talked about will be available online, so you'll be able to easily get to the website, to the Instagram page. You can reach out to Chris. Oh, do you have an email or a way that people can reach out to you directly?
Yeah, it's Chris with a K. It's Chris at seasonreport.com. And perfect. If you go to the About page, it's right there as well.
Sweet. Great way to get direct contact in case you get questions. But I thank everybody for listening. Head over to social media. Make sure you're following the Season Report on Instagram, Facebook, all those great, grand, wonderful places.
I will say it's My Season Report because Season Report is I believe it's a European handbag company. So it is My Season Report on social media.
You can buy fine European handbags, but you will not get access to useful hunting, foraging, and gardening information. My season report on Instagram. Yeah, and with that, once you do that, make sure you're following Harvest in Nature so you can keep up with all the great things I talked about at the beginning of the episode here. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us what we're doing wrong, or, you know, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.